Hey, this is Dan Levy. Welcome back to the Awful Announcing Podcast. And I'm happy to bring on for my second episode my favorite producer in all of radio. And I say that as a guy who worked in radio for a year, Paul Pabst from the Dan Patrick Show.
I don't believe I'm your favorite producer. I don't know you can name three producers. I mean, come on. Was that faux compliment? Is that a real compliment?
No, well, first of all, I can name my two producers at SiriusXM. That's
okay,
two.
Okay, I hope so.
Mark Stern, who's Kornheiser's producer, who I love, but right. I haven't talked to him in years, and I talk to you more, so you've bumped him off the list. There you go. Congratulations.
I was Kornheiser's producer for 3 days back in 2002. That was a great run. It was really fun.
I thought it was more than that. I wanted to actually ask you about that, and I wanted to get into the whole ESPN stuff. But it's interesting, because I thought you were with him for longer than that.
I was being a little facetious. I know it was less than 2 weeks. Long story short, there was a lot of shakeups going on at ESPN Radio in I think, summer of 2002. I was working College Game Day Radio and NFL and ESPN Radio, and all of a sudden, Dan Patrick needed a producer, and Tony Kornheiser needed a producer immediately. And so the next day, they put me on Tony Kornheiser's show, and he barely knew who I was because he never came to Bristol, Connecticut.
Sure.
But I told a story once. I interviewed for a job with the Jim Rome show, and he loved talking about Romy back in the day. And so I came on air maybe a month before that and told the story of interviewing with Jim Rome, and he got a big bang out of that. And then I worked with him for 2 weeks, and he was really great to work with. He's got a salty reputation, but I thought he was a genius on the radio and really fun, even though it was only 2 weeks that I worked with him.
Hey, I think we have to stop. Because Sports Illustrated just recently, or as we're doing this, put out their social, Twitter people to follow.
Must follow for 2016?
Yeah, so there's like a list of everyone, but then they actually have it separated by athletes and coaches, media, entertainment, and teams. So I'm looking, you're not in entertainment.
Oh, thanks for leading with that I'm not in it.
But PFT Commenter is under entertainment, which is interesting.
Right.
But here under media... Do you want to see if you're in it? Because I'm going to go out on a limb and just say I'm not in it.
Are you going to be bummed out if you're not in it?
I'm in the Deadspin one every year. And so it's funny because I think I've been waiting for like three – every year that Sports Illustrated does this, Deadspin does one right afterwards. And I've always been in that one, like the worst people to follow on Twitter. And
do we do the thing where we pretend it doesn't bother us when we're not in? Or do we – because then we can't be excited if we're in it, if we pretend it doesn't bother us if we're not. So, you know what I mean? All media people lie and say, I don't care if I'm not on that list because you're not on the list. I would bet that I'm not on Sports Illustrated's list. I'm not sure either way.
Right.
And I think one time John Orand mentioned me of Sports Business Journal as someone to watch on Twitter. But
he's in this list. Orand's in this list.
He's very good.
Yeah. No, but see, so the thing about – just quickly to finish up the Deadspin thing. I've been waiting for them to not include me on their list because they think it'll burn me up. When it's funny because the people who put me on there, I asked one of the guys who I was friendly with a couple years ago, I was like, why am I on this list? They're like, I don't know. People were just throwing names out. It's just so sort of slapdash that it's funny. I would like to be on the Sports Illustrated list. I will be completely honest.
So who wouldn't?
I don't think I am.
Down. You just throw out the media name that's on the list.
Oh, well, there's like 50. I mean, I'm not doing everybody. Oh, my gosh. It's more media people than anything, which is sort of funny because I don't believe any people are Sports Illustrated, and they do that on purpose because they don't want to play favorites. But a lot of ESPN people, my buddy Will Brinson from CBS is on here.
Here's what I'm going to do to make myself feel better.
You're not.
Dan Patrick writes a page for Sports Illustrated. We have a small partnership with Sports Illustrated, the Dan Patrick
show. Oh, so you think it's a conflict.
I can convince myself that Sports Illustrated didn't put me on that list because they didn't want to show any favoritism to the DP show. That'll help me sleep better at night.
Yeah, no, that's fine. If that's where you want to go, that's fine. Rachel Nichols on the list, Katie Nolan on the list, Pro Football Talk, which is, they have a I don't know, it's NBC, that's you. Mike Pereira, I didn't know he was considered media, but I guess he works for Fox, so that's Bill Simmons, I've heard of him, he's new, he's new to the list.
Yeah, I've heard of him, yeah.
My good friend Matt Moore, but his hardwood paroxysm, HP Basketball, which is great that he's on here. Greg Wyshynski, I'm just naming my friends at this point. But that's it. No, it's nobody. It's basically anyone, Spencer Hall. It's anyone who has like a million Twitter followers already. They did.
Oh, really?
They did basically Tim Burke they did basically zero service to anyone who was in that like middling, like, hey, they're a good guy. Let's put them on there. No, nothing. It's all just like big ticket people.
I hear you. You know what? When I kind of tried as long as I could to not use Twitter, I think I'm caught in that hybrid young guy, old guy phase where I'm like, oh, the Twitter, it's not going to catch on.
Oh,
like,
the Twitter.
How wrong could I have been? when I started using Twitter, I think my first Twitter post was, I really don't know what I'm doing on Twitter, and all I'm really going to use it for is to alert people about the ends of good sports events. Like if a game is coming up and if some game is about to go to overtime, I was going to use Twitter to alert people what channel to put on. Because my friends, when we first got cell phones, not when we first got cell phones, but when my old buddies from college, we all got cell phones that had texting capability. The only thing we really used the texting for was to like say, hey, dude, turn on Lakers Clippers. It's going to overtime. And we live all over the country, my college friends. And we called it like being a sports wingman, you know, letting your buddy know there's a good sporting event. Because sometimes, you know, you can't watch every sporting event every night. And I don't want to watch an entire Utah Jazz Grizzlies game. I can't do it.
Right.
But if they're in double overtime, I want to check that out. And so when I started on Twitter, I figured that's the only really thing. I don't think I have anything especially interesting to say. I can make some pithy jokes here and there like anybody else. And then I figured I could use Twitter to let people know, hey, you know, Colorado State versus Colorado college football going overtime, CBS Sports Network. And maybe some people will get to see the ending of a great game, and that's really what I've used it for.
And it's, by the way, a great service that I think Yahoo, was it, ripped you off?
I think Thews ripped me off, Yahoo, and all that stuff. But, it, you know, I guess you could get people to sign up and pay for it, but I don't know why someone would sign up and pay for a service when you can kind of get it free on Twitter.
Sure.
And, of course, a month from now, I'll find some app company to partner with, and I'll sell it for $5 a year, come out like a complete douchey hypocrite. But you know what? At least I said it here first.
Yes, and then I get no credit for that either, or money. But anyway, I have some specific questions for you. There's a lot of reasons why I wanted to talk to you. I've been wanting to talk to you just in general for a while, but when I was doing the show on Sirius XM, your show was against mine. I was 7 to 10. You guys start at, what, 9 in the East, right? So there was that horrible crossover hour that I had where, no, I'm serious, and this is one of those things I want to ask you, because you guys are the big fish in radio, so you don't have to counter program on anyone, but I would always try to be conscious of what you guys were talking about in that first hour, because if I'm discussing a topic and you're actually talking to that person, like let's say, for example, you know, Cam Newton, today's the anniversary of his car crash.
Right.
If I'm talking about that, I want to program that clear from your time. Because if your first segment is, hey, let's bring on Cam Newton, then what am I doing talking about him at the same time? Because if anyone's on Sirius, you know, it's a little, maybe I'm a little overthinking it, but they're going to turn the dial and listen to you guys talk to him, not me talk about him.
Yeah, I've wondered that too. Sometimes in radio, you could overthink or underthink things. But like, if I'm driving down the street and I'm listening to a sports radio show in the middle of a Saturday afternoon, and they're talking about college football, I find that weird sometimes. I'm like, if I was interested in college football, wouldn't I be watching college football right
yep,
now?
Yep, totally.
Don't I want some NBA or some hot stove? And it's tough because sports radio can be very complex if you think about it and parse it down to those little bits of how do I counter program, how do I keep people listening for the quarter hour. You know what? I guess maybe I've been doing this a long time, and Dan Patrick is. Our only motto here is try to be as entertaining and have as much fun as you can for 3 hours. And, you know, we're never perfect. We know we're not perfect. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people who probably don't like our show and like another show. That's great. There's a lot of stuff out there for everybody. But if you like our show, I think you know what you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, five guys who are going to have a good time, talk about the sports of the day, try to get some really good interviews. I think we have one of the best interviews in the business doing the interviews. And you're not going to have a bad time. And hopefully we're not going to take it so serious that, you know, not everything's an argument. Like, I don't get mad about, you know, Cam Newton doing the Superman thing. I'm not going to do a diatribe on how he's hurting the children of America. That seems very concocted.
It is. But hold on, because don't you... Oh, all right, look, again, I'm interested in your perspective on this, because the show that you work on is established. But for a lot of people, how do you get noticed unless you go nuts? And like, you guys don't have to, because we know that I'm going to tune in to Dan Patrick, I'm going to go on to DirecTV, NBCSN, and I'm going to see a solid, decent interview, some reasonable conversation. And you're right, like, that might not be everyone's take, for a lack of a better term. Having said that, if you're starting out, if you're trying to make people pay attention, I feel like that can't work. I feel like unless you're just lighting your hair on fire and running around naked on your front lawn, it's not going to work.
You're probably right. But the problem is, how can you light your hair on fire 250 shows a year? If you yell all the time and argue all the time, it seems like it's just you're a one-trick pony. You got to evolve. It's like a band. I don't think they put out a band. Most bands don't put out the same album every year when they put out a new album. I'd rather have a career that's like a slow burn and people catch on to and build and build and build, like a show like Arrested Development. Or I was listening to Paul Rudd, the actor, and he was on with Howard Stern the other day, and he goes, you know, you've got a slow road to fame. He goes, you've never been the most popular guy in the room or the most famous guy or a leading man, but now Paul Rudd's on Ant-Man.
Right.
Paul Rudd's a household name. He's one of my favorite comic actors. And that's, I know we have Dan Patrick, who's really famous, but I'd rather have our show not, you know, McDonald's sells a lot of burgers as, I mean, the best burgers. And I'm okay. You know, everyone can't win the ratings. There's always going to be someone who's number one. But I just want to go home at the end of the night and say, like, hey, man, I think our show is good. I think it's quality. And I'm not embarrassed to do it.
Right. But at the same time, I think you can say that because you might not be winning in the ratings, but you're comparing yourself to Mike and Mike or comparing right. yourself to Cowherd. You're not comparing yourself to a podcast on a website that talks about sports media or to a guy who worked at SiriusXM for a year. And because the guy who runs SiriusXM just felt like changing things up, he was out of a job. And I'm internalizing a little bit, but it's different.
People who are making waves in the sports media, the blog media and stuff like that. Yeah. They're the guys who are the flamethrowers and I get you noticed. Sometimes it gets you fired. Sometimes it gets you noticed. Sometimes it gets you promoted. And I don't know. I guess, you know, like you said, I don't have a young 25-year-old host. I've got Dan Patrick, who's a sports legend, hosting the show, which makes the doors a lot more open to the show, getting guests, whatever it may be.
Have you ever had someone say no to you guys? Have you ever had someone that you call up and say, like, not just like the timing won't work, he's on a plane, but, you know, no, I don't like Dan, or no, I think you're going to sandbag me?
Not in those exact words. We got an email from an NFL team the other day that wouldn't let us have a star player, and they said, you know what, we don't trust our player on your show. And we took it as more of a compliment that Dan's going to ask some questions and they get more out of him. And then the next day I saw this player on another show, and it was a very vanilla interview, and the PR person even put it in email. He goes, hey, man, this kid's young, and I just don't think that, you know, if he goes on your show, he's going to be able to keep it together. He'll probably cut loose a little more because, you know, Dan's not a kind of guy who grills people. He's more of the guy who's going to offer you a little bit of, you know, put a little honey on the stick and say, come on, let's talk a little bit. And next thing you know, you're in a conversation. Dan's not like, tell me what you did in the fourth quarter and why you threw that interception.
Right.
Dan doesn't do that. He's like, all right, so what were you thinking on that third quarter play? It looked like you weren't, you know, like he could a little more sly. So I'm trying to think of a guy who just said no. Yeah, we've had a few that it seems like they just don't want to do our show, but not in the words that I don't like Dan. But I'm sure there are people like that.
Yeah, and it's funny because my old show was weird because when I started it was What's a Podcast. I mean that was no one knew and so it took a lot of time to get people to say yes. But then once, and it was Kornheiser, I think, was the first one for me who came on my show, and then once I said, hey, I've had Tony Kornheiser on. No one else is going to say, you don't want to be the media person who says no after Kornheiser said yes. And this is, you know, 5 years ago.
Right.
So it's sort of, now I almost feel like I'm looking around and seeing every big name in our industry is like, oh yeah, I'll do your podcast. I mean, not ours, but you know what I'm saying? Like the stigma is gone.
The reason people like going on podcasts over sports radio shows sometimes these days is you have a chance to talk for more than 8 minutes. It's like when you go on, I've never been on Letterman, of course, but if you go on Letterman, you sit down, you do 6.5 minutes, and you're out. And there's no discussion. It's, you know, you plug your product and you go.
Right.
If you go on a sports radio show, for the most part, it's less than 12 minutes. That's a typical sports radio segment, anywhere from 6 to 12 minutes, about what you're going to get out of a guest. But if someone sits on a podcast, you know, it's a little more loose. The topics are a little all over the place, but purposely. And there's not commercial breaks that are jutting into everything all the time. You can actually have a discussion, kind of like we're doing.
You know, it's funny you say that because this is the second one that I've done since doing radio. Kenny Mayne was on last week, and now you.
Wow, you're going down fast.
Come on, man.
Real fast.
Hey, I'll be honest. I was trying to get your boss on. Which, again, it'll happen at some point. But nonetheless, no, in all seriousness, I did want to talk to you about this because I want to get into this whole, like, sort of industry radio. And I have some specific questions about your show, but also about just how you program radio. But the difference for me is striking because I'm so used to, after doing that for as long as I did, I'm so used to the clock. And you say, you know, 12 minutes. I would actually go 15 minutes, and people started to be like, wow, I can't believe how long this is. We used to get guests who were excited to come on our show because I'd keep them for 15, 18 minutes. And our breaks on SiriusXM were minute. So we had so much. We had, I think, 53 minutes of the hour or something to fill. I'm ballparking there. So we had a lot of time. And we tried to fill that with as many guests, especially the last few months I was by myself. I would try and stack guests as best I could. So we were able to do more, But to stretch something that I could do in 12 or 15 minutes to 30 even, and then to look at some of these podcasts now and see people talking for like 90 minutes, I'm thinking, like, I don't even want to have a 90-minute conversation with my family. Like,
right. I don't think I've had a 90-minute conversation with my wife before. You know, she kind of likes me. the tough part about radio is, one of the tough parts is that the commercial breaks are not controlled by Dan Patrick or Mike Greenberg or Jim Rome or Colin Coward. We're kind of at the behest of the advertisers. And we get these little, you know, segments that we could do anywhere from 6 to 13 minutes, and we could push them a little bit here and there. But a lot of radio is timing, and you, right. If you have a guest that calls, let's say I got a call right now from who would be a really tough guest to get. Let's say Barry Bonds called and said, you know what, I can come on tomorrow morning at 9:45 in the morning. Well, our 9:45 segment is about 8 minutes long,
yeah.
And it's got a hard break in the radio. It's a hard break is when you must break or you're off the air because it goes to commercial. So let's say Barry Bonds calls at 9:45 and says, I could do it. Let's say we have exactly 8 minutes with Barry Bonds. Is that enough time to do justice to the one interview you're going to get with Barry Bonds? No, but sometimes the guest says, this is it. This is the only time I could do.
Yeah.
If now Barry Bonds called, I would say, like, you know what? We don't like to tape interviews. We probably tape 5 interviews a year out of 1,000. But if Barry Bonds was going to call into the show, I'd be like, Barry, can we tape it at 12:30 Eastern time and really chop it up for 20 minutes, 30 minutes and edit it into 2 segments? And that's the ideal for someone who's a monster guest like
that. Sure.
But if he calls and says, I'm coming on in 5 minutes, we've had monster guests call and say, he could do it right now. Or even to the fact, like, I remember one time Kobe Bryant called. We didn't know he was calling. It's happened a lot. And all of a sudden the hotline rings. I pick up, and I'm like, Dan Patrick? Yeah, Paul, Kobe. And I knew that it was his voice. And he goes, I'm driving, listening to the show. He goes, the Lakers said you wanted me to call in. And I'm like, the Lakers never told us he was committed to calling in, so we were a little bit blindsided. But it was funny because the one thing I love about Dan Patrick is he can smoothly handle something like that and doesn't need an hour of prep.
Oh, I'd be freaking out.
I know. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine if Kobe just calls it, go, let's go. And we were in the middle of a segment, and we were like, and I realized we had 9 minutes left in the segment. We're going to do Kobe right now. And I just put him on hold and said, Kobe Bryant on the line. And Dan goes, Kobe, what do you need? I'm in the middle of a show. I thought it was so smooth of Dan. Instead of going, oh, it's very exciting to have Kobe Bryant on the Dan Patrick Show, Subway, Fresh Take, Charcoal, Brook King, Hotline, whatever it's called. And so he's like, what do you need, Kobe? He goes, oh, I was just listening to the show. I thought I'd call him. He's like, all right, what do you want to talk about? And he actually said it to Kobe like that. And sometimes you get those gold things that fall in your lap, and those are just the best.
Yeah, see, I'm the exact opposite. When my producer, when I did the show on Sirius, he was at the Super Bowl, but we were not. Which was the writing on the wall, I think, for me. But it was East Coast show. The Super Bowl was in Arizona, so they keep us at home. But he's out there. He at the end of our show, he sends a note to the person who's filling in and says, "I have a special guest coming up, but I don't want to tell them who it is."
Wow.
And I said, "Then don't do it. Then don't do it because I'm not gonna do." And this is when I had a co-host and I was writing all the questions for both of us, and
right.
It was very stressful for me to have interviews because I felt like I had to prepare like crazy because I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Right.
And so we go back and forth, and I say, "You need to tell me who the guest is," and it was Teddy Bridgewater, and
okay.
he had just won the Rookie of the Year award, and we were gonna get him on like one of the first people to talk to him after he won the award, and I said after the show to my producer, I said, "You need to tell me this stuff. I am not good enough at this. Like, we are live on the air, and people are listening to my voice. I'm not good enough to just be extemporaneous and say, like, if it was you, if it was another media person, I can do that. Off the top of my head, I could not write any questions. Let's go. But for someone who I want to know his stats, I want to know, you know, do I ask him about Adrian Peterson or not? Because this was when Peterson was obviously still suspended. I wanted to prepare. I don't need the blindsided nature of that."
Right.
And so I was very upset, and I made my other producer tell me 2 segments before, and I was able to prepare some questions, and it turned out that it worked out as a pretty good interview.
Right.
But I am not amenable to that when it comes to being prepared because I don't want to look like a fool.
I hear you, and I think it takes years to do that with Dan. When I started working with Dan a long, long time ago, I didn't pull stuff like that. But as we get older, a lot of times I'll surprise Dan with a topic. Or one of the other guys, well, any of the Danettes, the Dan Patrick Show producers, will say, like, you know, sometimes something, a piece of audio or a guest will, I think, is going to call in. And I'll say, Dan, like, who's calling? I'm like, you'll find out when he's on the line. And Dan will go, okay. And,
yeah,
and he'll trust me up until the time where I screw him. Then I'll be like, hey, dude, no more surprises, right? You know, he'll say that. But so far, we're knock on wood. But sometimes I want to get Dan's real reaction on the air with a piece of audio or a comment, a quote, or let's say, you know, Wayne Gretzky just calls in and say, Dan, special caller after the break, who is it? Can't tell you.
Wow.
But, and then, you know, Dan can handle that, but man, that takes a lot of reps, believe me.
Right.
But it's fun when those kind of things happen.
And the other thing it takes is you need to be okay with missing something. You need be okay with if you missed a bit of news that happened 3-4 days ago. I'm not okay with that. Like, I'm just consumed with making sure I get all the questions right.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not okay with that at all. One of the worst things that happens on the Dan Patrick Show is we'll get done with an interview, and sometimes there's like an obvious newsy question. It doesn't happen too often, but when it does and you miss it because you're having fun, let's say, Brett Favre calls in, and there's a piece of news out there about him amongst the topics, and we have some fun with Brett Favre. We get into some serious stuff with Aaron Rodgers, blah, blah, blah. And then, all right, Dan, good talking to you. All right, Brett, take it easy. And then hang up. And Dan will go, oh, I forgot to ask this.
Right, right.
Nothing bothers Dan more than that and me and the other guys because he may not have that chance again. He may not call for 2, 3, 4 years. And you're like, oh, man. And that's when Dan doesn't beat himself up too much anymore. It's not like when he was younger and he probably took things a lot more to heart as far as like listening to stuff over and over. But when he misses a question, he'll come up to me the next day like, that Brett Favre question. I'm like, yeah, I know. And we roll, let it roll off, but you don't let it roll off too much.
Right.
Because
well, you
if
can't,
it doesn't bother you at all, you don't care anymore.
You mentioned the Danettes, as you guys call them. I have a question about them and you. What does everyone do? And again, this is a sort of a two-part question because for us, it was relatively bare bones. We were, as serious XM stations go, as low budget as it gets.
Right.
I had a producer, I had a board op. I was here in my house. My co-host was in his house in Atlanta. They were in New York. There were other people who worked, on this, getting us out onto the, as I like to tell my kids, my voice was in outer space. Somebody had to get us into outer space and back. But
sure.
There was really just three people working on the show. And then when my co-host was let go and it was me and a producer and a board op, that was it. You have like 9 people there. So what does everybody do?
Wait, I thought we had 35 producers. We scaled down to 9?
I want to get to that. I will get to that.
Okay. So we have 4 producers here. I'm the producer of the show. My job here is mostly the content of the show, what's coming through the speakers, the tone, the direction, the ideas. I'm the guy who talks and gives Dan information, whatever it may be. I'm kind of his main producer. I guess it would compare to, if you listen to the Stern Show, Gary Delabate.
Okay.
And but everybody has a voice here. Like if everyone has, can pitch guests, can pitch ideas, can give Dan questions. If we get in the break and someone has an idea for the next segment off the cuff, you give it to Dan. We don't have you have to funnel things through me. That seems kind of dumb. You want to let everybody have an open mic. And then Patrick Seton O'Connor, he is, we call him the director of operations. He does a lot here as far as he handles a lot of the stuff with the sponsors, the organization of the show. He has a lot more work than, you would be surprised. He has to do a lot of stuff. Sponsorship is such a big part of sports radio.
Sure, yeah.
Todd Fritz, a lot of people know Fritz. He's been booking guests since since radio was invented. I think he booked an overnight show with Marconi. He worked with Marconi a long time ago. But he's a great booker. He's a bulldog. He just is relentless, and he just does not take no for an answer, but in a polite way. Andrew Perloff, came to us from Sports Illustrated. He's got a great ear for radio and a ear for performing. He's naturally good on air, knows his football, knows his sports, is really good with ideas, and it's great because Dan's secure that he could go on air by himself. But he likes the idea of having input and having people to play off of,
right.
And bounce things off of. And it's not just him talking. It's people who could jab him or ask him questions or pose ideas or differ with him a little bit on air.
Do you consider the show a radio show that's on TV or a TV show that's on the radio? And the reason I ask that is because I am amazed at this time that there are so many shows out there that have been on the air for as long as they have that are just staring at people talking into a microphone.
Yeah, it's funny. When we were at ESPN a long time ago, they wanted Dan to do the radio show on TV. And they said, well, you'll have a camera there in front of you and then a camera in the side. So there's a shot from the front and a shot from the side. He goes, okay. He goes, and what else? He goes, well, and that's it, and you just do your show. And Dan didn't really think that was very interesting. It seems like radio on TV is very boring, I think, if it's not surrounded. And so when DirecTV, we partnered with DirecTV, they said, we're going to make a radio show on TV, but that shows everything. We're going to show how the sausage is made. To me, it's like having one camera in the front of the restaurant and another dozen cameras in the kitchen. And we have 11 cameras in our studio. We put tape over the little red lights, so we don't know from minute to minute which camera's on.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We don't want to know. We chose not to know which camera's on. So if I'm have my finger in my ear as Dan's talking to Wayne Gretzky, they'll focus on it and they'll have fun with it. And we also don't wear makeup. We would,
right.
You wouldn't wear makeup on a radio show. Why would you wear one on a radio show that's shot for TV? We are a radio show first. We really, you know, Dan makes sure he paints the picture for the audience. If he's making fun of Charles Barkley's outfit during, he has to describe the outfit. He said, oh, he's got these purple pants on. Now, if you're doing just a TV show, you don't have to describe the outfit. So we always think that radio comes first, and TV, our DirecTV is really good. They're very creative, and they treat it like a high-end TV show with graphics and cameras and producers and content. So it's a bit of both, but it's a radio show first.
So how many people are, I mean, going back to the 35 producers thing, how many people are on the TV side? Because if you have four people who are sort of the on-air producers and then Dan, how many people are in that room with you, or are they in a separate facility and then just feeds?
They're in Los Angeles. We do the show out of Milford, Connecticut. We are above a bar, and we have two rooms that used to be an old dance studio, and we converted them. We're about a mile from Dan's house, about 10 miles from my house, and we're in a little suburban community, and it's a real nice little town by the water, and it's just the five of us. And then we have this fiber feed that goes out to Los Angeles, the DirecTV broadcast operations, and DirecTV has the control room out there. We're 3,000 miles away from our director, our line producer, our graphics people, and so forth. We see them a couple times a year when we go out there or go to the Super Bowl. I can talk directly into their ear. There's a little thing called a McCurdy box, and I can talk back and forth to them directly, or I am them directly. But it's a bit like the Truman Show. You know, if I'm upset with something they do or something they show, I can't just walk across the doorway and talk to them. You'd have to, you know, call them up after the show or something like that.
Wow.
And I think it's better because, you know, they can shoot our show from a distance and somewhat objectively and just show what they want to show. And it is weird because, you know, there's no control room 10 feet away. It's 3,000 miles.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not their job to sandbag you guys and make you look fool. Although sometimes,
but occasionally it is. Occasionally it is. If they see me fall in my chair, like I sit down in my chair is not working, and I fall back, they will clip that, roll it, and tell Dan and totally sandbag me. And that's good producing, and that's what I would do.
No, that's different, though. That is making you look like a goofball. That's, hey, look how much fun these guys are having. That's not, you know, you guys go to break and Dan's chewing you out because you gave him somebody gave him misinformation and he asked a dumb question.
Right.
You know, maybe he doesn't do that, but
well,
if he were.
We've shown that before, though. I had a situation maybe 3 years ago where Dan didn't like something I said, and he was a bit serious when he gave me, he was like, hey, you know what? And he kind of said it to me, and it was on camera, and we didn't turn the cameras off, and I didn't yell at them to turn the cameras off because I was like, that would be pretty hypocritical if I say we're showing everything and how the sausage is made, and then when I finally actually do something where Dan chastises me, excuse me, during the commercial break, I'm going to say, hey, Dan, put your mic off. Occasionally, if I have to talk to Dan or one of the guys has to talk to Dan in the break, and it's sensitive as far as, like, you know, a guest phone number or, hey, what did this person say about this, and it's off the record type stuff, then we'll turn our mics off. But, you know, if we have a bad moment and Dan's going to jab us for it or vice versa, or we try to leave the cameras and mics on because otherwise we're a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I mean, I remember a couple of times where our brakes didn't fire and we were on the air for commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't anything bad, but I try not to curse in just general life. I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I just, I don't curse around the house. But I'll tell you what, on some of those breaks, it was a salty, salty time. And if that got out, I'm okay with it. I can live with it because I always cared about the show and I always wanted to do a good job.
Yeah.
But there were some times where it's like, bleep that person. How could they just say that to us? Or how could, you know, I can't believe this person just didn't show up as a guest. And then I realized, I work for satellite. Everything's being recorded. I should probably calm down a little bit.
Right. It's funny. The ability to go from a swearing guy to a non-swearing guy from moment to moment is a weird, I guess it's a skill. But in the commercial breaks, you'll swear and then your mic's off and then, you know, you come back and you're like, all right, we got to clean it up. And, you know, like, we've all gotten busted swearing on the air before. Dan happened to Dan 4 weeks ago. He was hitting a golf shot and he just said something. And I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he was already out there. So, you know, we're a bunch of guys that work in sports. I think every once in a while someone could hear a swear word without freaking out.
You mentioned 35 producers and whatnot. And this is a question. No, it's all right, because a couple of things. And I wrote this at Awful Announcing, I don't know, about a month ago, maybe a little bit more, about I heard from a lot of current ESPN employees that they are tired of former ESPN employees, of which you are one, saying negative things about the place when it helped them turn into stars. And look, you work with Dan. Before we go, I want to get into sort of what you know, how you would be untethered to him, and if that's something that you would eventually even think about doing. But for the sake of this part of the conversation, Dan Patrick is probably one of the three most famous people to leave ESPN. Most recently, there has been the floodgates opening with Colin Cowherd going to Fox, obviously Bill Simmons going to the Bill Simmons mansion, and you know, Olbermann Whitlock leaving. So it's been sport this fall and into the winter to rip on ESPN. I heard from people when I wrote the article, mostly about Simmons, Whitlock, and Cowherd, but people specifically told me that they were upset that Dan Patrick gave back that award and took off his visitor pass when he was on Van Pelt's show. But you guys had to deal with all that on your show both before and after, and you obviously have some feelings about your time at ESPN. So how do you sort of handle that and not align yourself with Colin Cowherd right now?
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know people were actually upset that Dan did this. So what happened was, I'll address that one first. When Scott Van Pelt left his radio show and decided to do his own sports center, I talked to him maybe a couple weeks after. I know Scott really well. He's one of the people I really respect and got to know right before I left there, and we keep in touch quite a bit. And so I was texting back and forth with him about something just random, and he goes, hey, my show starts, I think, late August or early September. He goes, the first guest I want to have on is Dan for my first show. And he explained why. I was like, what a great idea. That's very cool. And so I said, let me work on that. I love that idea. And I sent it to Dan, and Dan goes, he was kind of surprised. He was very honored. He thought it was very cool, Scott. And and he said, yeah, let's do it. And there wasn't much discussion about it. And so we drove up there. I met Dan up there on, I think it was Labor Day, so it was definitely a holiday.
Yeah.
The place was a ghost town. And we went right into Scott's meeting and walked in. Dan had not been on campus since, other than Stuart Scott's memorial, he hadn't been to Bristol, Connecticut since the day he left his last day at work. And so he walked in there, and they gave – it's funny because as you check in, security is a lot higher now at ESPN. They have a very secure entrance area. And they're not kidding around. It's very high-end security. And so the security guard had no idea who Dan was. And he goes, can I get your ID, please?
That's sure, great.
Dan didn't do the, do you know who I am? He handed over his ID. The guy printed out a little visitor pass, and Dan put it on his chest because he told us to put it on our chest. I had one, too. So we walked in, where Dan put his suit on, and as we're getting, Dan's getting ready to go on the set and tape the segment with Van Pelt, a couple producers go, hey, you want to take your visitor pass off? And Dan goes, no, it's funny. It's a funny joke. And that was the entire thought process in it, that he thought it was funny that someone gave him a visitor pass, and he thought, I'll just leave it on because I thought it's funny. Van Pelt goes, that is funny. And that was the entire discussion about it. It was not some orchestrated gesture in any way. And he walked on set, and Dan was just cleaning out stuff at his house recently and found it was like some type of plaque type thing
right.
that he got from Disney. And he thought he wanted to give Scott like a housewarming gift, like a studio warming gift. And he just had it, a pile of stuff in his office at home, and he didn't give any more thought to this may be funny when I hand it to Scott. So I hope anyone who thinks that it was like some type of snub or jab at ESPN, you know, Dan jabs ESPN on the air sometimes, but that was in no way concocted. He thought it'd be funny for Scott. That was it.
It is interesting. But to the other point, and as I was writing that article and then heard some feedback from some people at ESPN, it sort of got me thinking the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But in your case, that's not true, because not everyone who has left ESPN is specifically your friend, but also certainly friend of the show. I don't know how you feel about Bill Simmons and Whitlock and people like that, but I know Whitlock came on. Didn't he come on right after he left ESPN? Didn't he talk to you guys?
Yeah, I think first? We had a bunch of people as they left. It was like their outgoing interview. I think we had Beadle, Gottlieb, Whitlock, a bunch of different people. It just became this running gag as they left ESPN. And here's where that goes back to. When we started our own radio show back in 07, we had about 29 affiliates. We were all of a sudden back to the junior varsity and working our way up. And one of the directives up at ESPN was letting their talent know. And it wasn't very overt, but they said ESPN talent is not supposed to go on anything but ESPN radio shows.
Yep.
That's not the dumbest thing in the world. They're trying to control their brand and help their radio affiliates. If I was working there, I would probably said that's a smart move. But it hurt a show like ours. I wouldn't say it hurt a show like ours, but it affected a show like ours because we've had Wilbon on for years and Mark Jackson and Peter Gammons and so forth. Years and years, friends of Dan's, friends of ours, regular guests, and now that was just cut off. And when we would ask, we were just told flat out no. We'd go through the PR department or we'd go to the person specifically, and they were told, hey, I cannot come on. I've been told specifically I cannot come on your show. And that was bothersome. So instead of like, at least for me, I was like, you know what? This is not really good for anybody because ESPN is not promoting their brand outside of
their
four walls.
Right.
And it hurts a guy like, you know, let's say Michael Wilbon writes a book and they won't let him go on our show. Well, he's trying to sell a book. or Scott Van Pelt gets a new show and he wants to promote it and he can come on our show to promote it. Doesn't that help them more than it helps us?
What's funny about that, real quick, what's funny about that is the first email that I sent when I got my radio show was to ESPN PR. I'm friendly with all of them. And I said, look, I know you're going to say no to this, but I have to ask. I want your people on our show. And they said, well, they can't, because maybe every once in a while, if they're plugging something specific, like a book or something like that,
sure,
we can get them on. But if it's just like, hey, let's have a conversation, we're not going to say yes to that. And yet when I'm doing this, a podcast, because they don't feel like this is a competitor, even though there are, I mean, different philosophies on radio. We went through that. I can get anyone from ESPN. They're pitching me guests now.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, guys, you've known me for 10 years. I'm the same guy. I'm promoting your brand. I'm not going to just go after your writer because he's on a competitor's, you know, show. It's just so funny how they,
yeah.
And yet I get it at the same time.
What we did, like around 2008, I was like, you know what, this is kind of silly. Why don't we just, you know, try to get along? I mean, I get along with almost everybody that still works at ESPN, lots of friends, and we're all going to work together again someday. This is such a cyclical business.
Right.
They're going to hire me, I'm going to hire them, or vice versa. You know, that's going to come around. And so I started working with this really good PR guy up there named Chris LaPlaca. And I said, Chris, let's just, you know, try to work this out. And how about every once in a while we have an ESPN guest on with your permission, and, you know, we'll work it out. And he's like, all right, let's work that out. And so over the years, it started with, like, I think one day we had Trey Wingo on because we were talking something about the draft. And then another time we had Gammons on, and another time we had this. And then I think the big one was Van Pelt called in one time. When Van Pelt got nominated for the Emmy, is his first sports Emmy nomination, a really great moment for that guy. And Dan goes, let's put Van Pelt on.
Right.
We called. They said yes. Van Peasy called in. It was nothing but a pat on the back for him. And it was nothing but good. Dan didn't bash anybody. And then I think the big one was the Super Bowl in New Orleans. I worked for a year to get Chris Berman on set because Dan and I had a side bet. He goes, "Oh, you can't get Berman on." I'm like, I don't know if I can either. So I don't know if I can too big of a bet. I go, let's try it. It was like my white whale. No offense. And it's just I wanted to get Berman on really bad, and he's a legend at ESPN, and he was there when Dan arrived there. And so it was 2 days before the Super Bowl, and Chris LaPlaca of ESPN PR said, "We have a go. We have a go."
Wow.
And I was like, I had like the total producer Woody, if you want to call out that. I mean, for a producer, that's big. And so when we didn't promote it until like hours, you know, the night before,
right.
We didn't want anyone putting a kibosh on it. Berman said, "I'm doing it. We're doing this." And he came on set. It was just such a cool moment. And whatever you think of Dan, ESPN, Berman, to put those two on a Super Bowl set together, for me personally, that was a blast. And it was a good half-hour interview. Nobody got hurt. And ever since then, we just call ESPN. They say, "Yeah, we'll have a guest here and there," and put them on. It's been the relationship is good.
It's very good. It's so good that when Bob Lee re-signed with ESPN and had that new thing, he was on your show. I tried to get him on my show. And look, Bob and I've known each other for years. He's always been good with me. Always when I need a quote, when I need this, that. He said, "I'd love to do it, but they won't let me do it." And then like 3 hours later, he was on your show. And I sent him an email. I'm like, "Are you serious?" He's like, "No." He goes, "I'm allowed to do Dan's show. That's part of the deal."
Yeah.
And I thought, sons of bitches, I'm nicer. At that point, I was nicer to ESPN than you guys. I will guarantee you that.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. But you know what? All is well.
All right. I want to end on a couple of sort of quick hit questions. We've sort of ducked the Cowherd enemy thing. But let me ask it this way. If there's one person in our industry who could have laryngitis and you would never have to hear their voice again, who would you choose?
No, I wouldn't say Colin, you know, because I respect Colin as a radio host. There's a difference between agreeing with what someone says and like their take on a certain athlete or something and respecting their ability to host a radio show. I respect great hosts. Colin is a great radio host. Why? Because he knows how to push buttons.
Right,
he knows how to host solo. Like he says, you know, doing a show solo is a lot of work. I mean, try doing a three-hour solo. I've never done it myself.
I've done it for 5 months. It's not easy.
Tough.
Yeah, it's really hard.
While I disagree with some of Colin's takes, you know, that's more about my sports knowledge or my sports judgment. But he is a good radio host. I have no problem
when
with
you
that.
Say
when
takes.
I knew him at ESPN, I only knew him for a year. I didn't have many interactions with him, but he was nice to me. If you're going back to that one time where he jabbed Dan, said, you know, he said, "These guys are hard workers, and Dan's not a hard worker." I think what Colin was trying to say was, try hosting a sports radio show by yourself, and try hosting a sports radio show when you have four producers who you could bounce stuff off of on air. If he's trying to say that it's tougher as far as like, not pressure, I don't even know what the word is, but it's you got to talk more.
Right.
And if it's tougher to do it by yourself than with four producers, he may have a point. But what he did was, I think he stretched his point to say that Dan is not a hard worker. And that Dan disagreed with pretty vehemently. And you heard what he said on the air.
Right,
I don't
sure.
rehash that. But the one thing I will not say about Dan is he doesn't work hard. I would never say that. He comes in every day. Like yesterday was no big deal. Yesterday we had Luke Kuechly on the show and Reggie Miller and Ron Howard, the great director, in the studio for a half an hour. He walks in today at 7 a.m. and goes, what are we doing today? How do we get this guy on? What are we doing for here? What are we talking about this? He does not phone it in. The day he starts phoning it in, I'll never see because he'll quit the day before.
All right, but you didn't answer my question. I use that as a backdoor to Cowherd. And by the way, when you said Cowherd takes, I think you meant when he took your idea for the story time. But nonetheless, I'll say that. You don't have to.
That's all right.
Is there someone you would eradicate off the face of the earth, at least their voice?
Man, that's a toughie. I don't have a lot of hate in me. Maybe I'm getting soft. You know, I don't like radio hosts that are boring and phone it in. You know, if I'm sitting there listening to a national radio show and you hear some boring segment where they're like, you know, let's get into the Seattle Mariners bullpen issues. Hey, blank, blank, what do you think of the Mariners bullpen issues? And they let him talk for 60 seconds. And then he comes back and says, all right, let's get into the Cubs. Cubs added Zobrist. What do you think? And then there's 60 seconds. All right, coming up next, we'll have, you know, it just feels like lazy, uninspired, unprepared radio. And I hear it all the time. But I also hear great radio all the time, and I don't like to name names because I don't think that's fair.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, and I don't even know the names sometimes because I turn the channel pretty damn quick. but I'll listen to some sports radio show and either drive around the country and I'm like, why aren't you having fun? Why don't you act like you care? You know how many guys would kill to have your job? How many men and women in their 20s and 30s who hate their job and know sports probably better than you and probably do a better job and just because of circumstances don't do what we do? I really think this job. When you work in sports media, you should always have the fear that someone younger is going to take your job. It's good for you because we have these really cool jobs. We get paid to talk about sports for a living and cover sports. And whenever I hear any of my coworkers complaining about, oh, man, I went to the Super Bowl and I got stuck at this bad hotel, I'm like, come on, man. Come on. I know that hotel isn't that great. But you got a paid Super Bowl trip again, and you're eating free meals again.
Yeah, the press box lunch was fried chicken again.
Whiny media. Now, if you're going to do it on air, then it's funny. when Tony Kornheiser whines, it's funny because he's doing it on air. And he brings the whining or whatever, the complaining on air. If Dan complains, like, facetiously about, like, oh, you know what, they sent a limo for me, and it was not exactly a stretch. If you can make fun of it, it's great. But when you're truly complaining about working in the sports media, or it's the worst.
All right. Speaking of working in sports media, you know that we have a new, for people who maybe are listening to this through awful announcing, you don't know, we have a new site. It's thecomeback.com.
I've been the comeback.
And look, it's fun. It's a lot of work. It's been an immense amount of work for me.
It's a lot of work.
I'll complain all you want. My alarm is set. This goes back to the radio stuff. My show used to start at 7. So I would get up I like palindrome. So I get up at 3:43. It was 3:53, and then for some reason I just kept waking up before my alarm. So I figured, let me just set it for 3:43. And that's what time my alarm. The last 3 days, I get up like 45 minutes before my alarm, and I turn it off. So I've been up at like 3. Yesterday, I was a zombie. I mean, we're doing Hanukkah. I'm afraid I'm going to like burn my house down because I don't know how. Like, I should not be around an open flame with how tired I am. And I love it. It's fine. It's a lot of work, but it's fun. And yet I've. When I was at other places, when I was at Bleacher Report, Sporting News, whatever, we had to try and figure out ways to get traffic. Right. But especially at Bleacher Report, we were a giant snowball rolling downhill. I'd write an article, and by the end, I was mad if 100,000 people didn't read it. Like, what did you guys do wrong? Now I'm in that area where I need to just, like, what's going to resonate with people? What's going to, and so we're coming up with these ideas. So I need your help because you're part of that snowball rolling downhill. We're doing some of the year posts. So can I ask you two, and if you can give me some thoughts to help me sort of workshop this on the air here?
Okay.
Who had the best year of anyone on the planet in 2015?
Sports-wise?
No, anyone on you. Give me a sports and an anyone. Like, because my thought is, my answer is Donald Trump. I mean, he went from being a clown to being literally taken seriously. I mean, as much as I politically disagree with him and fearing for our country if he has any sort of, you know, actual decision-making power, he had the best year of 2015.
You know, I don't know about Trump. You know, the one thing is he became worldwide forever famous. He was American famous and infamous for years, and now he's hated by half our country and beloved by the other half, I guess, which he was always more of like this famous guy who does all the things that cheesy famous guys do, the bad hair, the too young wife, the marble everything, I'm going to point to how much money I make. He was more, it was harmless before. And I'm not going to say whether I believe or disbelieve what he believes in politically. I don't care about his politics. But, I definitely think he went from American famous to worldwide famous, if you want to say that. That's for sure.
All right, so who would you pick? And then if you want to limit it to sports, I mean, who had the best? We're trying to do these rankings, and the good thing about it is it elicits debate, and, you know, hopefully we'll send it to you guys, and you'll spend 10 minutes talking about it and mention our site 3 times, and then, you know, we'll double our traffic, which, by the way, you've now agreed to by your silence. I've
sure, why not?
Yeah. But who would you pick for that one?
Who had the best year? I think, and this is very obvious, but I'll start with Steph Curry because he went from last year. Last year at this time, we had Steph Curry on, and Dan asked who he thought was the best player in basketball, and he said me. And it got a lot of flack, like, whoa, he said he's better than LeBron. Find anyone who would have a problem with that statement today.
Right.
If you told me that LeBron was playing in my backyard or Steph Curry was playing on my TV, I'm probably going to watch Steph. And it's not anti-LeBron, it's just we've seen LeBron's act before, and Steph is like this. It reminds me of mid-80s Jordan. When I lived in Chicago, I wouldn't miss a game. They could be playing this awful team, and you're like, this guy's doing something special tonight. Now, on the other hand, if you tell me Steph Curry's out of the lineup tonight and the rest of the Warriors are a good team, I'm not watching because nothing special is going to happen.
Right.
So I think he's gone from very good, better-than-expected player to household name, must-watch TV, which in this culture, for one person to be must-watch for an entire sport, that takes a lot. There's not anyone like that. It reminds me of Reggie Bush when he was in college.
Yeah.
And going back to Reggie Bush in college, if Reggie Bush were playing Fresno State on a Thursday night, I'm going to watch. And he wasn't like that in the pros, but he sure was in college. So that's my sports guy, even though that's an obvious one. That's one that's pretty good.
If LeBron were at my house, I mean, again, you're around famous people more than me, but if LeBron's in my backyard, I'm going to hang out with LeBron.
Well,
I mean,
you're not going to pass to me.
I can DVR the other, but I can, like, I mean, come on, you can watch the game on DVR. Can't DVR a guy in your backyard, is all I'm saying.
I think another guy who had a great year is Gronkowski. Remember when Gronkowski was the bad guy of the Patriots 3 years ago? And, like, him having a beer at LSU with some frat kids was a big story. After what happened with Aaron Hernandez, Gronk can do nothing that's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be facetious about this, or, you know, it's like he's like the guy who does the interviews for the Patriots now. They put him out there. They want him talking. And he's, you know, an all-pro tight end, first ballot Hall of Famer on his way. And a couple years ago, he was this goofy dude, and now he's a household name that's just kicking ass on the field and the face of the Patriots off the field.
All right, so my last question for you, and it has to sort of do with...
I know any podcast, when the host says the last question...
There's three more
last questions. Always on the podcast, because you guys have the room. I love it.
Yeah, well, no, but I'm looking at the clock, and I'm thinking, I've taken up most of these people's day. You know, it's... what is it? My old show, it's funny, because I used to get emails when I did the podcast, not the radio show, and
right. People
said, I loved your episodes that were 30 to 35 minutes, because that's how long my commute was. And any more than that, like, I had to sort of listen on the way home, and then it got distracting, and my boss would yell at me because I'm sitting in the car.
Well, like, I know what's going to happen here. You're going to edit all down to and just make it so I jab Coward in some way. That's okay. I understand.
Is that like The Simpsons, that sweet can,
right. Sweet
can? All right, so this will be my last question for you. And it has to do, you mentioned it before about this, and we've talked about it off the air. What do you do if you're not with Dan Patrick? I mean, I talked about us writing and trying to develop this new thing, and you guys are a snowball rolling downhill. I mean, do you ever sit back and say, man, 20, you know, when you said you were sort of that JV when you guys left ESPN and started your own thing, you had 28 affiliates, 29 affiliates. That's a lot of the country. I know it wasn't all major markets at the time.
Sure.
But that's a lot of the country. And now it's, you know, you guys are on TV and you know, everything. But have you ever been nervous, like, what do I do if Dan just retires?
Or, like, if tomorrow morning Dan Patrick said, I'm retiring, it's great to work with you guys, here's a little something.
I mean, you're talented enough as a producer that you're going to find a job, but, like, you're rebooting everything. I mean, are there other things you want to do? Would you write again? Would you...
Yeah, I love writing. I wrote my school paper, of course, at Southern Illinois University. I've written for Sports Illustrated and things like that, and I like it. But I like less pressure writing, not daily deadlines. Those, to me, are, you know, oof, that's still
right.
That's the bear that you guys have to deal with. I don't think I would work in this industry if Dan Patrick quit. I would not really want to work with another sports host other than Dan. I feel like, and I'm not saying this because I work with him, because I feel like I work with the best. or amongst the best. And I don't think I'd want to go to some guy and have to prop him up and get used to him again and have him, you know, yell at me for something. Maybe I'm too old for that. I would probably like work in the media, but like, you know, do like a sports travel show or a food show or something like that, work on, or try to host or something. Or I teach a class at Sacred Heart University. It's a small college in Fairfield, Connecticut. I love doing that, and that's kind of where I'm going to retire someday. But you know, I do want to do something different, but I definitely don't want to leave the Dan Patrick Show to do so.
Right.
I really look up to Gary Delabate from the Howard Stern Show. He's had opportunities. Believe you me, he's had opportunities to do other things, television and other things, but he knows I'm on something great, and you may only get one chance to be on something great in your life. Most of us don't even have that. And I feel like I'm on something great. I totally believe in what we do here. And I don't know if we're going one more year or 10 more years. I really don't know. Dan's never had any discussion, and he would tell me if he thought the end was near. But he's having too much fun now. I mean, I think he definitely still has his fastball, so I'm not worried about that. But I would like to do other things in the industry, in sports maybe, but not produce a sports radio show with a different host.
Well, you're always welcome to hang out with us.
I
appreciate you.
The crossover, I would like to maybe do some type of USFL retrospective, you know, that's kind of niche, real, real niche stuff. Not a lot of clicks.
Well, hold on. USFL, I would be your editor, and I would just write Trump, because he didn't own one of those teams, right? So
I'm USFL. I'm like, I would be a historian. I was a big fan of Anthony Carter and the Michigan Panthers and, you know, Mike Rozier and the Pittsburgh Maulers. I can go team by team, and I would like to be. I don't know if you're going to have a special USFL history section. Like, that seems a little niche-y.
For you, we could carve one out, man.
Yeah, but I mean, it would be very low on the sitemap, like under disclaimers, you know, somewhere. That's me. I'm calling that. I'm dibs. I called it.
All right, so now you got me, because now that was my last question, but I have one more thing to say. So, you know, when I was growing up, down the street from me in Secession, Jim Mora lived like 8 houses down from my street. I grew up in Marlton, New Jersey.
Okay.
And Jim Mora was the coach of the USFL team, I believe, in Philadelphia at the time. I think it was USFL. It must have been. And then down the street from him was Bruce Arians, who was at the time the coach at Temple. And his kid, Jake, was on my soccer team growing up. And so we were good friends, and I used to hang out at his house. And I went a couple of times to, like, Temple football practices, and we'd, like, kick field goals and stuff while the other – and they weren't very good at the time. And now he's, like, the greatest coach in the NFL, so it's kind of neat to see. But you've made me somewhat depressed, given that you're like, you might only get that chance once.
Yeah.
Most people don't get the chance. I mean, keep it in perspective. It's the Dan Patrick Show. It's not the Paul Papp Show, but you're a huge part of that show.
Yeah,
and most of us are jealous.
As a group, we're all for the producers of the show.
Yeah, we're all jealous of you.
But you know what? Can I play topper real quick? Because I've never been able to tell this story.
Go ahead.
Because you're talking about neighbors. I grew up in the South Side of Chicago, and my dad played high school football at Chicago Vocational High School, CBS. It's on the South Side. And he was an okay player. But one of his best friends growing up was Dick Butkus, the Hall of Fame lineman from the Bears. And so when I was a little kid, after Butkus retired, Butkus used to come over to our house and vice versa. My dad died when he was like 39, but he and Butkus were friends until they died. They went to, like, you know, each other's weddings and so forth. And I remember I was about 8, and Butkus had been retired maybe 3 years. So he was still, I mean, the legend of Butkus in Chicago is a lot bigger than I think people could understand nationally. So Butkus every once in a while would come over to our house. And I just remember one day I was sitting out there. My dad and Butkus were sitting out on our front porch having a beer. It was a hot summer day. And I was just realizing the level of fame that he had. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, maybe 9. And I looked across the street, and there's about a dozen of the men in the neighborhood standing on the corner watching Butkus drink beer on our porch. They were too afraid to come up to him and, like, ask for an autograph, and there's no cell phones back then for a picture, but they just wanted to watch Butkus drink beer. I was like, that guy's famous. And I realized, because I didn't know, you know, that was when Walter Payton was getting started, and he was my favorite, but I was like, Dick Butkus is a really famous guy, because there's a dozen men watching him drink a Budweiser or an Old Style on our porch.
That's amazing. That's a great way to end this. Thank you so much for taking the time today.